Fast Eddie here at EAA Radio. In the studio with me today, we have Tuck McAtee and his brother Steve McAtee. Gentlemen, good morning.
Hello, Fast Eddie. Good morning.
How you doing?
Good morning.
Guys, you've been involved in an interesting project here called Pushing the Envelope. What was the inspiration for this movie?
Pushing the Envelope is a culmination of 8 years of 10 EAA members flying together to Alaska in home-built aircraft. There were six SX-300s and two Questair Ventures. The footage was taken over a period of 8 years, and we put it together just recently into the form of a 28-minute documentary. The inspiration for it was just the experience over the years of flying in close formation with a group of really close friends that have been flying together for life, and at 250 knots, close formation, just inches over the ice. And we wanted to show anyone who's interested in sport aviation, and specifically flying to Alaska, what that's like.
Why did you guys choose SX-300s and Questair Venture aircraft?
The SX-300 group started by a guy named Keith Phillips down in Spruce Creek, Florida. It's a unique airplane, and it's got the speed and the efficiency, and also it's a stick and rudder airplane that flies like a fighter. It's probably the closest general aviation airplane that is configured. Some of us come from a fighter background, and so we came together, got interested in this airplane. They were built by various people. We got to know each other and started flying formation with each other and decided that we ought to go out and on some venture of some sort. We did an early version of that in the United States. And then the following year, we decided, let's go for it, let's go to Alaska, and we just had a wonderful time. And so we've repeated that four times to date, every other year. And it's been a magnificent experience for all of us.
Were there any special considerations for the aircraft or the crews?
It turned out that the SX-300 was perfectly suited for this because in Alaska, you've got a lot of vertical development. There's a lot of places you can get into trouble. So having XX energy is very, very important, and this airplane has that. So you can go screaming up and down the glaciers there with, you know, relative comfort. Good visibility, good controllability, good legs. Just ideally suited for doing the kind of thing that we wanted to do. A lot of people fly in Alaska, but it's with the bush pilot kind of approach to it, slow flying, and airplanes that can, in fact, get into some situations if they get in the wrong place at the wrong time with certain weather conditions. This airplane gives you a little bit of extra performance that when you need it, you've got it, and that made the whole thing much more entertaining.
Did Alaska pose any particular problems for the aircraft?
Well, Alaska, the biggest problem is weather. We generally would fly in VFR conditions, which, depending upon the current situation, could deteriorate. And so you had to really be mindful of that and plan for it. There were a few times that we got into some situations, but experienced pilots figured out how to compensate and made it safely. But
were you able to get hangar space for the aircraft?
Well, we met some people in Alaska that actually take care of us at a place called Wolf Lake. It's just to the north of Anchorage. And a wonderful group of people that live there. It's a fly-in with a runway and a residential area built around it. They've invited us into their homes and their hangars, and they fly with us and fish with us and take us places and show us Alaska. And great group of people.
You shot video over a period of 8 years, you were saying. Did that pose any particular difficulties?
The technology of video changed considerably from using a handy cam first trip to your iPhone and the GoPro in the last 2 years. And the vast majority of the footage was taken in the last 2 years with a GoPro. It was just a matter of having multiple GoPro cameras facing the exterior and the interior. We also recorded a lot of the communications between us. Most of the time we were out alone away from communication, and so we had just each other to talk to, and we were very careful to make sure that we were all in sight and close proximity to each other. Should one go down, the other three would devise a plan to have those persons rescued. We went up a couple of different ways. Most people go up what they call the trench through the middle of Alaska. I think a lot of people tend to avoid the coast route, although we took the coast route, which was beautiful because the glaciers coming into the water there are just a wonderful playground to cover, just visually spectacular.
There's nothing more awesome than Alaska. The immensity of it is just overwhelming when you first see it, and it doesn't ever seem to diminish. It's just unbelievable.
What season were you flying to Alaska in?
Well, you know, we looked at the charts, and the best days to fly to Alaska turned out to be between about June 16th and July 8th. Statistically, those are the days weather-wise where you have the highest probability of good weather, and that really worked out that way for us. I think we really only had a handful of days over the years when we could not fly.
Did you have any special equipment or tools or parts or anything that you brought along?
Well, yes. Generally, we travel with all the tool kits. And in fact, since most of the people have built their own airplane and are maintaining their own airplane, we're equipped to do whatever we have to do when we get somewhere. Interestingly enough, in Alaska, you can get overnight parts pretty readily. Since the Alaskans basically live on their aviation, there's a lot of inventoried parts and a lot of infrastructure that can get the parts if you really need them. But that we did have some mechanical problems, me in particular, in fact. I get kidded about it all the time.
Were there any special criteria that you guys had for this mission?
Obviously, you had to fly formation. So some of us are military pilots, retired military pilots, and so that's our second nature. Some weren't. And so we went through a pretty intensive training program to get everybody very proficient, close formation, even in weather, all the procedures that go with it. So once we got comfortable with each other flying at formation, then that was basically it. All the pilots are high timers, some airline, some military, some general aviation, but all very good pilots.
When you were flying formation, were you Blue Angels close, or did you have a little more room there between the aircraft?
Well, depending on the situation, if in a cloud, of course, your Blue Angels close. And when we go around to these different towns, they want us to do flybys and stuff like that. And we're Blue Angels close when we do that. Some of the scenery that we filmed, we did it in close formation. So we're all comfortable flying very, very close.
Were you filming from the aircraft into formation, or did you have a camera aircraft that you used on occasion?
We filmed from an aircraft in formation. Usually off to the left wing of lead. And we tried to use as many shots that we have that pictured the diamond formation low over the ice, not too far off the ground, and tracking along at about 250 knots. So it's a fast-moving, visually spectacular film from that perspective. And that speed allowed us, especially from Wolf Lake, using that as a base to work from, to get to just about anywhere we wanted to in a relatively short period of time in Alaska. And so that meant flying out to Kodiak Island and through the stretches of the far end of Kodiak Island, which is, there's places where you just wonder if anybody ever touched foot. As a matter of fact, there's places where you're pretty sure that nobody ever did touch foot.
Were there any adventures or complications that popped up?
Well, actually, there's one in the that's actually documented in the movie, which involved Tuck and I having lost our alternator in a cloud, and we had to kind of split up, send a couple of guys onto Wolf Lake, and then we relied on our wingman to get us home, and that's documented in real time in the documentary. Luckily, we made it back.
Now, if I was a person and I wanted to see your movie, how do I go about doing this?
You would simply go to the website pushingtheenvelope.us. So just the three words all together, pushingtheenvelope.us, and tells you all about the story, pilots, and allows you the ability to watch a trailer. And then if you wanted to purchase the video, you're able to do that right from the website. The proceeds for the website, and you asked the first question, what was the inspiration for the film? Well, part of the inspiration for the film is the fact that Tucker has recently started the Williamsburg Aviation Scholarship Program, which is a program designed to take high-achieving juniors and seniors and get them a pilot's license. So it's the cause is good. It's set up in a format, I should let Tuck talk about it, that replicates military flight training. From a competition perspective.
Right. The incentive, of course, was to give kids a chance to learn how to fly like we were given a chance when we were young. Unfortunately, today it's about twice or three times as expensive, and most of them can't do it anymore. And at the same time, we're looking at a pilot shortage coming up, so it's in the best interest of everybody in the aviation community to make these new programs happen. This one we call the Williamsburg Aviation Scholarship Program, or WASP. And it's fashioned after a military training program where they all go to academics together in ground school. They all fly at a schedule that is synced together. They're all evaluated in their flights and their academics. And they all compete for three different phases of scholarship. So it's competitive internally. It motivates the kids. After our first selection this year, we got five students. And looking at them, I'm not sure they need the motivation. They've got it. They're on cloud nine. Being able to go out and learn how to fly, they never expected that they'd have that opportunity. And we're hoping that we prepare them, get a pilot's license, which you know afterwards, there's a lot of ways you can get time without having to pay $180 an hour. And we match them up with mentors on the base on our airport. So the mentors have airplanes and one mentor for each student. And so the students can expect to get some flying time, free flying time from them too. So anyway, we're trying to prepare them for an aviation career. And that could be maybe the next step is to go to an aviation college like Embry-Riddle or Parks or. But there's more and more of them that are growing these days. So we can prepare them for that. We can prepare them for the Air Force Academy. That would be a great resume item for them if they're applying for any of the academies, in fact. Get them started in aviation and feed the industry, which right now needs new blood to come in. We also, if trying to generate enough revenue debt through donations to help out other communities to do the same thing. Any community that had interest in aviation has a certified training program that is at their local airport and wanted to create a program where their high school students could have an opportunity like this. We would be glad to help them put that program together and show them how we do it and get them launched.
Sounds great.
I'd like to just add to that because Tucker McAtee was one time the youngest pilot in the United States. The day he was 17, he got his private pilot's license. Of course, that allowed him to take advantage of a great opportunity going to the United States Air Force Academy. He graduated from the United States Air Force Academy in the class of 1962. Went on after that to fly in Vietnam, and the film actually is dedicated to the class of 1962 and 14 of Tuck's classmates that died in combat in Vietnam. And so the school itself, the Williamsburg Aviation Scholarship Program, is a kind of a heartfelt effort by Tuck because of his experience at a young age. And so in any event, we hope to duplicate that for some really neat young kids and turn them into leaders, give them an opportunity.
Sounds wonderful, guys. Appreciate that. The website, again, is pushingtheenvelope.us, and you're here in EAA Studios with Tuck McAtee and his brother Steve McAtee. I'm Fast Eddie, and you're listening to EAA Radio.